Lesson 12 begins on page 54. If you have looked at the title, you know that it is when I love God as well as when I love His people. We will pick up some helpers here, just a little bit, some Old Testament, New Testament verses. But let's look at the introductory material first. He talks about the church. The church is described in the New Testament in a lot of different ways with several different figures, one of those being the family of God, and that is a good image for it. We have in this family the older men. Sometimes they will be older men as far as their chronological age. Sometimes as we think about older men, they're going to be people who are serving as elders. We have the older women. They're going to be serving as maybe elders' wives, but maybe Bible class teachers. They're going to be helping out in various ways. And we also find that we've got some younger men. They're going to be referred to in the passage that we're looking at, 1 Timothy 5:1-2, as brothers, and the younger women as sisters. We've also got in 1 Timothy 3:15, the church referred to in what way? It is the house of God. Do you think that description, even though it's a really good description, may be difficult for some people in our day and time to understand or appreciate? Why might that be?
Think of it as a building when they
read it. Alright, sure. A lot of people, when they think of church, and sometimes even congregations are bad about that. You know, this is the church. No, it's a building. It's where the church meets. So, we've made this point before in our sign that says this is the meeting place for this congregation. It's not the church. Why else might people have some difficulty today with the idea of the church being like a home? What's the home like in many places in our country today? It's not a fun place. You have all those things. Maybe there's some kind of abuse in the home. The children feel forsaken. They feel abandoned. It's kind of like some who hear a Father's Day sermon, and their image of dad is bad. So when they think that God is a father, to them, there's no comfort in that. That's just, it's a painful thought. It's a bad idea. And sometimes when people hear the church is compared to a home, well, if that's it, I don't want it. So before we teach that, sometimes we have to say, here's the biblical picture of a home. And now if you have a comprehension of that, the Bible says the church is designed to function in this way. So we have reached a point where we literally have to take people sort of back to the ABCs and do some even pre-teaching before we can get to some foundational matters. He talks about Ephesians chapter 2, verse 19. You have there the expression, the household of God. All of God's children are called brethren, the children of God, 1 Peter 3:8 and 1 John chapter 3, verse 10. All right, here we begin now with our list of passages to get people lined up for. The first being 1 John chapter 4, 1 John 4:20 and 21. Who wants to take that? All right, Ray. After that, we'll look at the book of Deuteronomy. Two passages, Deuteronomy 6:5 and Deuteronomy 30, verses 19 and 20. All right, Terry will take Deuteronomy 6:5, Deuteronomy 30, 19 and 20. Who wants to take care of that? All right, Deuteronomy 30, 19 and 20. If you need some books, we should have some in the back. If we are short, would you let me know? Let's start with 1 John chapter 4, verses 20 and 21.
If someone says, I love God, and hates his brother, he is a liar. For the one who does not love his brother, whom he has seen, cannot love God, whom he has not seen. And this commandment we have from him, that the one who loves God should also love his brother also.
Thank you. He begins by saying, thou art with me. That's the theme that we're looking at in this series of lessons. Thou art with me only when he loves God and his people. For John says, if a man says, I love God, and a lot of people in our society will say that, oh, I love God. I've got a great love for God. We're close. I love God, but that guy in the church, not in the building, but in the assembly with me, how do I feel about him or her? I can't stand him. I hate her. They nauseate me. John said, if that's the view, he is a
liar.
That's pretty stiff, isn't it? I mean, especially in our culture today, to come out and just say you're a liar. Well, John says that's what's true. Then he gives a reason. For he that loveth not his brother whom he hath seen, how can he love God whom he hath not seen? And then he says, too, this commandment we have from him, that he who loves God loves his brother also. Remember the movement, and it's still somewhat popular, but it's a different form. Jesus, yes, the church, no. Anybody remember that? Jesus, yes, the church, no? Wow. Well, maybe we slept through that. But anyway, there was a period of time where people were saying that. It was a very common thing. We love Jesus, we love God, but we can forget the church. We don't need the church. Today, the version is, I'm spiritual. I've got this relationship with God. I don't need a church family. I don't need the church, etc., etc. Well, John says it just doesn't work like that. They both go together. Then, under our next heading, Love for God, this is on page 54. And again, is there anybody that's short a copy of the book? Okay. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 5. In ages past, let's see what God said to his people.
You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength.
Okay. Three blanks. Love God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your strength. You see an example of that in the secular world? Somebody loves something or someone with all their heart, soul, and strength. All right, that's probably one of the better illustrations that we'll be able to offer tonight. But, I mean, they live, they eat, they breathe sports. You know, first thing, as far as when they get up in the morning, let's turn on and watch the stats. Let's talk about it during the day. You know, they will gamble on their favorite player. I mean, it's just sports, sports, sports. What else? All right, you have some people, they just live to work. They just, maybe it's an entrepreneur trying to start a business and he just loves what he's trying to do and he devotes every possible second to it. Anything else?
It's awful nice to see somebody who loves their family that way.
All right, you do see some people, you know, if they lose a family member, it is just literally the end of the world for him or her. How am I going to go on, you know, the child or the husband, the wife? Maybe it was a brother, sister, whatever the relationship was. You know, he was my life, she was my life. You've seen that sometimes publicly with war victims. A person lost a spouse or, you know, maybe it was a brother, sister, and it's just the people from the military came to the door and I just don't know what to do. My life is just completely turned upside down.
The cell phone, especially when you're driving, you always see people on it.
There was, I just glanced at the story, so I don't remember the details. Maybe somebody can help me a little bit. But there was a country the other day that announced that they were going to kind of come up with a cell phone lane. Now, they didn't use that exact terminology in the article, but there were so many people using phones that they thought, we will give you your own special space as you walk.
A texting line. It was a walking, a running, and a texting line.
Yep. So yes, there are some people that love their phones so much. I mean, it's almost like it's glued to the hand. And you get the impression that maybe the phone is the object of love more than a person because, you know, they might talk to you, but, you know, they're still trying to text and look and read at the same time. So great illustrations. Then we have Deuteronomy 30, verses 19 and 20.
I call heaven and earth to report this day against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore choose life, that both thou and thy seed may live, that thou mayest love the Lord thy God, and that thou mayest obey his voice, and that thou mayest flee unto him. For he is thy life.
Okay, let's fill in our blanks once again. It's serious. So God says, I call on who? Heaven as well as earth. And I want them to record this day against you these matters. I have set before you life and death, blessings, cursings, and I want you to choose life so that you and your seed may live. Thou mayest love the Lord thy God, and you may obey his voice, and you may cleave to him, for he is thy life. Chris has been out of town for a little bit, and I am not that fond of vegetables, but when she is out of town, I still try to eat those from time to time. After about 10 days, if I've not had any veggies, I feel a little deficient. So I thought I'd kind of hit the deficient level today and had some stops to run, so I thought, well, you know, this side of town, over by Ryan's, I thought, you know, I'll go in there and grab some veggies and have a halfway healthy lunch. And as I was eating my veggies, I noticed that there was a piece of paper that was sent with me by the cashier, and it was about Father's Day. They're like every other restaurant trying to push Father's Day, coming in, good deals, and those kinds of things. And I was kind of intrigued by the piece of paper. It talked about, Dad, this is your day. And it was almost like a four-part coupon. Dad, on this day, I'll do these things for you. I'll make these promises. I'll be good to you. Those kinds of things. And I was thinking, well, maybe that is a good sermon idea. And then I scrapped that idea. But I thought, I may bring that into class tonight. And I'm going to make the connection between that and the passages that we just read, hopefully clear in your mind. When you think about Dad, if you really love him, are you just going to say, well, here's your coupon for the day? I'm going to wash the car, or I'm going to give you clean sheets for the bed, or whatever it may be. True love for Dad is going to be what? Not just once a year, but it's going to be on a regular basis. Well, if that's what's true in the physical realm, what about in the spiritual realm? You think there are people who still try to treat God with the same coupon mentality? God, here's the coupon, and I'm going to come honor you for 45 minutes. I'm going to come out once a week for Bible class. Well, God says, you know, that's part of it, but there's a lot more to it. So just don't rip out the coupon and say, here you go, God, but this is an ongoing thing. So when we think about loving God, Deuteronomy chapter 6, Deuteronomy chapter 30, realize that it is serious, and God says, heart, soul, strength, mind, you are to be people who are dedicated to me on a regular basis. But that's a concept that a lot of people just don't get. Anything that you want to add or ask before we pick up with the next verses? Okay. Next helper, 1 John chapter 4, verse 19. Who wants it? That'll be Jeff. After that, we'll take a look at 1 Peter. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 8. Our volunteer for that will be... All right, Terry, go back to you. Thank you. And then across the page, two more. 1 John 5, Matthew 23. 1 John 5, 3. Sherman and Josh, if you would, Matthew 23. We'll start with verse 3 and also read Matthew 23, verse 5. Let's start with 1 John chapter 4, verse 19.
We love him because he first loved us.
Okay. Love begets love. Sometimes you have people react depending on how things go. So John says we love him because he...
Sometimes it's a little difficult to be the starter,
but we can get going if somebody helps us a little bit, sort of primes the pump, if you will. Well, that may not be exactly what God had in mind, but he has done that. He was the one that reached out to us when we were dead in sin. He first loved us. Thus, our love for God does not come from physical evidence, for no one has seen God. He reached out, communicated that, and we see that through Christ. But there's no other visible evidence of that other than him, except what we find in the Word. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 8.
Whom having not seen you love, though now you do not see him, yet believing you rejoice with joy inexpressibly and full of glory.
Okay, Peter talks about the Christian life. And how does he sum it up? He says it has glory or joy that is unspeakable. It's great. Then he says you have that even though you've not seen him. Again, our proof for God, it comes in various ways, but it's not anything that is going to be tangible. It's not anything, for example, I can say this pew exists because right here. I could lift it up, or we could lift it up, or we could cut a piece off and say here's tangible physical evidence. But we have, as we look at life, and court is a good example of this. There are different ways to prove things, are there not? And just because if you're dealing with a murder case, you don't have the gun that shot the guy, and maybe you don't even have the bullet that went through it, is it still possible to prove murder?
Yes.
Sure. You may have video. And again, there's no gun that you've recovered. There's no bullet. So a lot of different ways to prove things, and that was Peter's point. The Lord... had not been personally seen by these people. There was sufficient evidence to believe in him, and he says, you have unspeakable glory. Top of the next page, 1 John chapter 5, verse 3, he says, for this is the love of God that we do something.
That we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not burdensome.
Okay. We've used this verse at various times. It's very simple. God says, if you love me, keep my commandments, John 14, 15, John 15, verse 14. And John says, as we think about keeping his commandments, they are not grievous. Do you find sometimes in the world, most of us have raised kids, do you find that kids sometimes think that the rules in the household are grievous? How do they express that?
Well,
all right. Sometimes it's not verbal. You can just see it. It's the eyes just kind of roll, or the shoulders sort of droop, or they slough off. Those would be some of the things that you see. What else? Yes. And what might some of the specific complaints be? You're right.
That's not fair. Why do I have to do this? They don't have to do that. Why don't I have
Those would be about the top four. Do you think spiritual children fall into that same trap? Oh, God. Being a Christian, preacher said that I have this responsibility. The Bible class teacher talked about doing that. All they want is my money. All they want is my time. You know, they just need another volunteer for this, that, and the other thing. So it's a problem. And it's kind of interesting if you go back and think about it. We dealt with that when it came to our kids, perhaps, or probably. When God deals with that, when it comes to His people, you think that might be a little, I don't know if God gets frustrated, but maybe that's not the right word, but not overly pleased. Maybe we could use that terminology. I suspect that's true. Okay, Josh, over to you. Matthew chapter 23.
So do and observe whatever they tell you, but not the works they do, for they preach, but do not practice.
Okay, let's fill in a blank. Jesus talked about some religious professionals. He said they say, but they do not. Anybody ever have a work situation where you had someone tell you exactly what to do? And they were supposed to be involved with it too, but they didn't carry their fair share load. They said, but did not. That is not fun. Well, how would it be? And this does happen in the spiritual realm. The preacher, the Bible class teacher, whoever it is, says, don't do that. And lo and behold, he's doing it as soon as service is in, or within the next day or two. What do we call that in the Bible? That's hypocrisy. That's being a hypocrite. And that's exactly what these people were doing. Nobody gets it right all the time, but these people were habitual offenders. Verse 5, Josh.
They do all their deeds to be seen by others, for they make their phylacteries broad and their fringes long.
Okay, so here you have people who are not only hypocrites, they said but didn't do. Jesus also makes it plain that they, as far as their religious works, were doing these things to be seen of men. Do you think that's also true? I do not like the Bible thumpers. Now, it's been a while since I've dealt with one, but this is the person that has about the 10-pound Bible and just loves to carry it around. I'm a Bible reader. Well, maybe they do have some good intentions, but generally the thumpers that I found are people who are not really committed to living the Scriptures. And there are other people, I've had a relative that wanted to brag about how we sent money to Oral Roberts' ministry. Well, that's a story in and of itself. But still, it was the idea that here is this famous person and I'm sending money to him on a regular basis. So, Brad, since you're doing some public preaching and teaching, I want you to know just how religious I am. And it's just like pulling the nails down the chalkboard, at least for me. Anything that you want to add or ask over that section? Okay, let's move on to the next paragraph. This is love for the brethren, 1 Thessalonians 4:9, John 13, 1 Corinthians 16 will be our references. Let's get our helpers. Brian, did you raise a hand? 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 9, 1 Thessalonians 4:9. Then we'll move over to John 13, John 13, 35. Terry, thank you. And then we'll look at 1 Corinthians 16:15. Jeff. Okay, let's start with the first one, 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 9.
But as touching brotherly love, ye need not that I write unto you, for ye yourselves are taught of God to love one another.
An interesting passage for a couple of reasons. Number one, let's get the blanks filled in. He said, really there's no need for me to write to you about this when it comes to doing what? Loving one another. Why do you think it was unnecessary to write about that? All right. They had already been taught about that. The second thing that you would add to that, they not only been taught about that, but they were following that. They were adhering to that, and they were doing that so well that Paul says, we don't need to cover that again. Isn't that a great kind of congregation to be associated with? The people, number one, they've been taught to love one another. The people in that group do love one another. And three, the love is great enough where this isn't one subject that needs a lot of attention. Now, we're not going to avoid it forever, but this is not going to be something that you hear, at least at this point, a lot of preaching and teaching on. So, from that perspective, this was a great, great thing. John 13, verse 35.
By this, all will know that you're my disciples, if you have love for one another.
Okay. If you look at the average person from the world, and you were to peer into their mind, how do you think they would look at a Christian?
The average person is going to say, that's kind of different or don't know what's going on with us a lot of times, and of course that really puts more on us to let them see Christ in us.
It does. Jeff, did you have a thought too?
Sometimes it can be with a degree of suspicion.
All right. That's going to be one of the answers that we could include as well. Anything else?
Well, most everyone's had an opportunity to come in contact with the person that really wanted to let on like he was a Christian, but he wasn't real, you know. So, and that hurts. Mm-hmm. It really hurts.
I'm not sure that the average person would look at a Christian and say the first word that comes to my mind is love. Now, there may be multiple reasons for that. One reason is, I think, by and large, our society looks at most people as good people. For example, if you were in a conversation, you were talking about Tim, for example, he's close, and we were saying, well, he's a Christian, look at the good things that he does. Person says, well, I'm not a Christian, but really there's not much difference than me and Tim. I'm a loving person too, what do? Thinking in terms of an average person in the world. Tim's got love, but here's my love. How do I show it? Buddy needs help on the weekend? I'm there. Guy in the street corner needs a burger from McDonald's? I just stopped last night, gave him $5 for a burger. How else do I show my love? Hold down a job? Care for my family? Provide the basics of life? Give them a vacation? I love. So, if we're going to be those disciples of love, we're probably going to have to step it up a few notches, don't you think? But Jesus said, by this will people know that you're my disciples. And it's in some ways, I guess, more difficult because with American society, we've got a middle class. How long that lasts, I don't know. But a lot of societies have not had a middle class. And with that middle class, people are able to do more and give more. And you have a leveling influence where, you know, sometimes it's just harder to stand out from the crowd, if you will. And the way that our culture is structured, in some ways it can be difficult to have that quality and make it distinctive, but still we have that responsibility. Thoughts that you have before we pick up with 1 Corinthians 16?
I have a situation. Since we're on the road, we're headed up this way a couple years ago. And made reservations at Singing Hills at Cave City, mm-hmm. RV park. And pulled in there, got out, walked in, M's in the truck, pulling an RV. He's sitting there while I went in to check in. And was visiting with a lady there. And she said, do you mind if I ask you where you attend church? And I said, oh, no, I attend West Main Church of Christ. And that's after she knew my name at this point in time because we had reservations and all. And she said, I would have, and this is kind of hard to say, but she said, I kind of thought you might have been a good Southern Baptist. And that really took me back. And I said, well, what do you mean? Well, sometimes the brotherhood is, said, you're nice, you know, but she says, I know where you're going, Barnett, going to church with them, you know. But the thing is I think we as Christians, I only tell that because it's a true story. She and all her kids were born in Africa. These were people that were missionaries. And she had written a book. Nan's got a copy of it, autographed, and all. But I think a lot of times, y'all are a very warm congregation here. I just want you to know, we're back, and we've been going to Elkhart over there at Willowdale, and we found y'all. And you're a warm congregation, a lot of love here. But it's not that way everywhere.
That's true.
And you have to protect it. And all, you've got good ministers and good teachers here, I know. And I've probably said enough, but it shows.
And sometimes, like I say, you can just be thrown in the mix and there's really no way to distinguish yourself. But there can be cases somewhat along the lines that you were describing where you've got some kind of difference. For example, maybe it's an older person to a younger person. The younger person thinks old people are not kind. or maybe it is an economic difference. You've got this rich person, you know, in a fancy restaurant, and the waiter or waitress is always accustomed to receiving bad service. You know, it's those rich snobs. But, you know, here you get this one in a million customer, and, you know, actually treats that person with respect, takes time to talk to them a little bit. You know, maybe it's going to be a difference in race. Maybe it's going to be, you know, as you mentioned, you know, maybe it's going to be a difference, you know, people talk in with a different accent. And the person with the accent, from our perspective, is always looked upon as funny. And, yeah, and people take them seriously. You know, but those would be examples of love which are going to be a little different, a little distinct. And those would be things that we should certainly try to maximize to fulfill that command in John 13:35.
I think that they have had a situation in their congregation, and I don't know, but I think they almost had a split, and I think that took a toll. But now she was a voice, they're wonderful people, and she's a very strong Christian, and she was paying me a compliment, but. I want to just be looked at as a Christian, but the thing is there's a lot of people in the South, and that's what she was thinking about, maybe take time to do some things, and we've got family up here up north that maybe it sure. So fast, and they don't have time for it.
Yeah. Well, they say everybody's friendly down south. Well, I'm not sure that's true.
That's not.
And the opposite, nobody's friendly up north. Well, I don't buy that either. So, Stan?
I thank you. I support your contention that we do, I guess what you would say, have to go above and beyond occasionally. Just to go back and look at the first church and the way people viewed the first church and what it was that they were doing. You know, when we look at the fact that they were taking care of the widows, we look at the fact that they had all things in common. So I think what we see there is a group of people who were going above and beyond, and so that says that they grew grace and favor with the people. So I think you're right.
Yeah.
We have to go above and beyond. Sometimes.
Right, and it is more difficult. For example, if you go back, and this is not going to be true of everyone, but by and large, I would attribute hospitals to Bible-believing people. That, you know, you start out with the people, we want to help others, and hospitals grow out of that. Well, now in our society, you've got hospitals or government agencies, they provide charity care. You know, most Christians are not going to be able to walk in and say, okay, you've got, you know, $250,000 heart surgery bill, and we'll just, you know, here's a check out of the church treasury. You know, it's paid off. So they were involved with the formation of it, and it's grown to the point where now it's, well, it's at a scale where certainly individually there's not a lot we can do to compete with that. You know, the government gets or the hospital gets the credit. Boy, they were such a nice hospital. They wrote off the bill or they reduced it by 90% or this, that, and the other. But there are some other ways in which we can find these distinct times and do that. Okay, 1 Corinthians 16:15, and then we're going to tie all this together.
I beseech you, brethren, you know the house of Stephanas, that is the first fruits of Achaia, and that they have addicted themselves to the ministry.
Okay, usually the word addicted is not used in a positive way. Here, however, it is good. What's he mean? They addicted themselves to the ministry. They devoted themselves. They were really involved. All right, here it comes. I'm going to mention this twice tonight. I have said that Harpers are coming back to this area. They've had a delay. And that means that they're not going to be able to unload tomorrow. In fact, they're probably going to be driving back on Friday. Well, Don is still at an age where he has... you know, the ability to move things, but they've got a 26-foot truck, and it sounds like it's pretty much packed to the gills. So, it looks like they could use some help Saturday morning. Now, Saturday, for us, is a busy day. There is a baseball game, there's Lou's visitation, there's Michaela's graduation, and you have your own personal stuff, and there may be another thing or two on the church calendar. So, I'm going to, when it's time for the announcements, see if we can get a show of hands. I'm mentioning this now in part because it relates to the lesson, in part because it'll give you a chance to maybe think things through or talk to your spouse about Saturday before we get to that point. But if there's any way that you can help Harpers Saturday, maybe between the hours of 8 to noon, 8 to 1, 8:30 to 1, even if you can come over for 30 minutes. A 26-foot truck is a big truck. Don has described it as far as the packing as he's got three large items in the middle of the truck, smaller items behind it, and in front of it. It took about three guys about 5 hours to pack it. So hopefully the unloading will go a little quicker and we can get some other folks. So when we talk about love and setting things aside and addicted to the saints, we've got a chance to put those things into reality this coming Saturday. So we really need some help. So give that some consideration, if you will. Next section, Matthew 7:3, Romans 14:13, Matthew 5:2, 1 Thessalonians 4, and Matthew 18. Need about 5 helpers. Matthew 7:3, who wants to be turning there? Josh? Then we'll look at Romans 14:13.
Go on.
All right. Then we'll look at Matthew 5, verse 22. Matthew 5, 22. Betty? 1 Thessalonians 4, 6. Sherman? Brian, how about Matthew 18, 21 and 22? Matthew 18, 21 and 22. Let's go back to Matthew 7, verse 3.
Why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye?
Okay. Filling your blanks and then applying the point. Jesus said it's possible to look for what in someone's eye? A mote, that is, something like a speck of sawdust, an item that's very, very small. While you yourself have a beam, something like a telephone pole, in your own eye. If we love people, we generally don't do that. If you have a child, you know, you love your child. Child's not going to be perfect, but you know, a little of this, a little of that comes up. Can you overlook those things? Sure, there's some elasticity there. There's some give and take. And we should be willing to do that with one another, especially when we deal with God's people. Romans 14, verse 13.
Therefore, let us not judge one another anymore, but rather resolve this, not to put a stumbling block or a cause to fall in our brother's way.
Okay, it's not quite the right time of year for this illustration, but let's say that your husband or wife, you're heading out the door for a Bible class on Wednesday night, and you tell your spouse, get in the vehicle, I'll be there in just a couple minutes. And you go in and you get a big cement block. And you put that out there where you know your spouse is going to stumble on it when he or she gets out of the car and prepares to go into the house. And sure enough, it's dark, he or she doesn't see it, and bang, right down the ground. What would you say about that? Well, yeah, you're probably going to get whacked with a bat. You know, it's not going to go so well. We would not do that to somebody that we love. But yet in the church, can we do that?
Yes.
We can put that stumbling block before them. And you know, you can't have that with love of the brethren. All right, Matthew 5:22.
But I say unto you, that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council. But whosoever shall say thou food shall be in danger of the council.
Okay. What's the word that we want for a blank? Calling somebody a fool. Do you think, without getting specific, some congregations have cases where brethren have called one another ugly names? Yeah. It's happened with Bible class teachers. Preachers have been guilty of it. Sometimes it's involved the elders. It's really bad. But once again, it goes back to loving our brethren. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, if you look at the context here, it's a context involving sexual matters. Let's have that sixth verse read.
That no one should take advantage of and defraud his brother in this manner, because the Lord is the avenger of all such. And we are forewarned, and we also forewarn you and testify.
Okay, our key word here, do not deprive him in any matter. So, again, that's a good general principle, but as I said, the context involves sexual activity. Then Matthew 18, 21 and 22, Brian.
Then came Peter to him and said, Lord, how long hath my brother sinned against me, and I forgive him? Until 7 times? Jesus said unto him, I say not unto thee until 7 times, but until 70 times 7.
Okay, here again. Person says, I want forgiveness. I've done something that's wrong. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Sometimes people will say, no, I'm not going to forgive you. It was too hurtful. It was too bad, too awful. I'll never forgive you. Let's fill in some of these without reading them. I don't want to hasten this, but at the same time, I would like to wrap this up tonight if possible. Matthew 18:15 is familiar to us. Here's a case where Jesus has said, deal with the problem in this way. Sometimes, rather than do that, a person will go and tell everybody about an individual's sin or trespass before dealing with it in the way that Jesus described. Here you can have, 1 John talks about this. You see a brother who has what? He's got a need. Think of it in terms of, you know, it's 10 below. Winter has come. It's really cold outside. The electric on your side of the city is on. The power on the other part of the city has gone out. And you think, boy, I bet Joe's cold over there. Just think, they don't have any food for him. Now, we wouldn't do that, but do you think there might be some people that would act like that? Hopefully not Christians. Yeah. So, if you've got electric and gas, go over and get Joe, if you can't reach him on a cell phone, and bring him back, right? You know, that's love. You have in James chapter 2, the rich and the poor. James talks about this fellow. He comes in, and what kind of clothing does he have? Vile clothing. I think one of the most disturbing things I've ever heard from a Christian is, I don't want to have contact with him or her because they smell. That to me is distressing. You know, if you have somebody that smells badly for some reason, okay. I mean, you know, your sniffer just doesn't like that, and we can appreciate that. But at the same time, you know, you've got to remember what we have over here in the Bible when it talks about love. And it's just sometimes you just got to kind of suck it up and do the best you can with it. All right, Philemon, verse 7. Here you have a fella. He was able to do what with the saints? He's able to refresh them, help them, make them feel better. And that's also part of love. 1 Samuel chapter 23 and also Acts chapter 18, verse 23. We have the same word for both passages. It's possible to do what for someone? To strengthen them, to encourage them. People need that sometimes. Older people need that. Younger people need that at times. And that's going to be part of showing love. Love of working with my brother. In the next section, he talks about the difference briefly between being a worker and a co-worker. In Philippians chapter 1, verse 27, Paul said, only let your conversation be as it becomes the gospel of Christ, that whether I come to see you or else be absent, I may hear of your affairs, and ye stand fast in one spirit with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel. I had an old teacher, he's really old now, and he told me what I thought was some really good advice way back when. He said, if you ever have a congregation, if you're worshiping with a congregation, if you're working with a congregation that's not getting along, he said, there's one thing that you should always consider doing. Anybody want to guess what that would be? Put them to work. It's difficult if you've got people that are trying to work together on a project. If they're not getting along, it's difficult to work. The project's probably not going to get done. But if you can find a project that needs to be done, okay, everybody show up, everybody gets involved, and a lot of those petty differences will eventually get sorted out. So that's really good advice.
A lot of times the problem is because they don't have...
Yes. Past. What's the old saying? Idleness is the devil's workshop. And there's a lot of truth in that, and that can be true for a congregation.
Yes.
If everybody's just kind of, you know, lackadaisical and there's not much going on...
Teamwork.
Yes, exactly right. So you can imagine what would happen in a secular business if people were not busy. That the business would just begin to degrade rapidly. But if you've got, you know, they talk about the mission statement. This is what we're doing. We're a team. We're unified. We're striving for this. That builds cohesiveness. And that should be a basic part of management 101. But a lot of times that's not applied in the church. Okay, 1 Corinthians chapter 1, he cites verses 9, 10, and 11, starting with verse 11. There were certainly contentions there. Paul urged them to do away with their divisions, to speak the same thing, and to be perfectly joined together. There's that unity once again. He also cites verse 10. Next page, page 57, for we are laborers together with God. Shouldn't that be how it is in every congregation? We're laborers together with God. Everybody's not going to have the same part or function, but we are all vital to the success of a congregation. And then he says in Hebrews 13, verse 6, the Lord is my helper. We need to remember that passage. We need to apply that passage so that we can do what's right and not fear. All right, then we have seven passages, and these are interesting. I'd never thought about the word fellow in this way. You could probably make a sermon out of this, a very easy sermon or Bible study. We are fellow, what? Ephesians 2:19.
Citizens.
We're all part of the same kingdom, part of the same church. Ephesians 3:6, we're also fellow heirs. It's not that, you know, some people are going to get a reward and some are not. Colossians 4:10, we may be a fellow prisoner. I don't think we've had that in our country quite yet, but that could be the case one day. Colossians 4:11, we're also fellow workers. It's not the preacher's job exclusively. It's not just the elders. It's not just the Bible class teachers. Each one is in this together. 2 Corinthians 8:23, we are fellow helpers. Well, sometimes in secular organizations, and this can have some impact on the church, but in that secular organization, if you've got only one spot for a boss and 10 people, what might you have? It's like going back into a jury box. You've got 12 people in panel for the jury. How many might want to be jury foreman? More than one. And somehow you have to work that out and say, okay, there's only one spot. Now, we all can contribute, we all can have our say, and we can sort out the facts together, but we do have to have just one leader. And in the church, sometimes that becomes an issue. But we do need to realize we're all fellow helpers. Philippians 2:25, we're also fellow soldiers. We're involved in spiritual conflict. 1 Thessalonians 3:2, we are fellow laborers. There is work to be done in the church. Acts 2:44 gives us a good picture, and all that believe were together, and they had all things common. Anyone know how that verse used to be used maybe 40 years ago? They had all things common. If you go back and you look at some of the older writings that may still be used in this way in some parts of the world today, some people use that to describe communism. It said the Bible supports communism. Had all things together. Communal property. Is that what he was saying? No? Luke wasn't supporting communism. What was he saying? If you need electric, the storm has knocked out your power, then what? I've got some food for you. We've got some water for you. We can get you some heat. So it wasn't the surrendering of personal property. He goes back and makes the point that in this series of studies, it's been based on Psalm 23, verse 4, Thou art with me. God's going to be with us as we go through the dark times of our lives, and we have some responsibilities for that. Bottom of page 57, he says, the Christian's life is filled with challenges, which when met bring sweet victories through his grace. But let's not forget to give him the glory, the honor for all that we accomplish. And then, page 58, let us remember also that if we want the Lord to be with us, we must seek daily to do the things which are pleasing to him. And that is right. This is what we hope to do as a body of people. Finally, perhaps you can make some notes in the space that's left in this page and give some additional suggestions to the class on how we can be sure that the Lord is with us. How might we do that? How do we know the Lord is with us? Somebody says, I just feel him in there. All right, that's going to be one. God has said this in his word. God does not lie. Titus chapter 1, verse 2. So it's. I hesitate to use the words an ironclad contract, but that's really the force of it. God is not going to lie. He's not going to renege in his word. So that would be one point. What else? How do we know that God's with us?
Well, if we're walking in the light, and let's just say we're driving down the road, and it's just you and you by yourself, and I find myself talking to God, maybe have a prayer or what have you. But I think it has to do with our attitude that we need to have as a Christian, and we're never going to be alone. You know, when we're baptized into Christ for the forgiveness of our sins, we receive the gift of the Holy Spirit. So,
okay. Okay, let's take those two answers. The map says this is the destination and here's how to get there. We're on the road, we're following the map. Success or not? Unless we decide that we're going to deviate from the route that is before us, so that's how we know. God has said, here's how to get there, here's how to go, and if we're taking that course, staying on course, we are in good shape. Keep my commandments.
Yeah.
On the course. Okay, we're shutting it down there for now.